Hi, this is Tony Tolato. As I do here on Rewind, I look at genre TV series from the present and not too distant past. The Orville was a unique sci-fi series. Was it a comedy, spoof, or at times a drama? This is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity. I spoke to executive producer Brannon Braga about that very same thing. You know, I got to credit you on the Orville, and I don't think people realize the balancing act between doing the serious stories and the stories that had humor, you know, kind of keeping that, but still keeping it Orville. That is not an easy thing to do. And obviously you have to showcase Seth's ability to do comedy, you know, and the people around him too, for that matter. So I appreciated that. And I really appreciated how difficult that is to keep that balance and yet to offer, because some of the serious episodes really dove into some Star Trek worthy themes, by the way. But the fun stuff was fun.
Yeah. I mean, you got to credit Seth for that, not me. You know, this was Seth's vision. If you look at the pilot, the very first episode of the pilot, it's far funnier and more broad. And we were finding ourselves. I think there were certain episodes in season one that were more the show than others. But by season three, we had found the balance. And the balance was it's not a satire of science fiction. It is science fiction, hopefully good science fiction, first and foremost. The characters are looser, more relatable, down to earth, a little more contemporary workplace comedy aspect to the show, which I think gives it something fresh. But at the end of the day, we wanted to still tell good science fiction tales. And season three, moving it to Hulu, which was a genius move on Seth's part that I really only understood later. I'm like, okay, he wants a longer running time. So instead of 43 minutes, it'll be 49 minutes. No, 80 minutes, 90 minutes. These ended up being, huge scripts with huge running times and visual effects, you know, feature film worthy visual effects, but also big emotions. You know, it's a very sweeping show emotionally as well.
Adrian Palicki plays the ex-wife of Captain Ed Mercer and his first officer, Kelly Grayson, and Scott Grimes is navigator Lieutenant Gordon Malloy, and they joined our roundtable at New York Comic Con.
My favorite line so far has been when you're getting beat up by the great Rob Nepper, when you said, "Oh, this is nothing. I've been through a divorce." I think that's funny, but that's what I like about the show. It's not just about a sci-fi thing. You can actually take the storyline about two people working together that have been divorced and maybe care a little bit more about each other. So talk about playing that aspect aside from the spaceship and all that.
Well, I mean, it's a hard character to come into because, you know, you meet her cheating on him, and reading that was an awesome challenge, but also a challenge. I think by the first episode, by the end of it, you kind of warmed yourself to Kelly, and you can see that there's love there. And there's just such a great love between these two people that I think people, and hopefully the fans, are rooting for them on some level to see where it goes, because I think it will be that, you know, will they or won't they throughout seasons, if we have seasons, which we will.
How have the characters evolved so far?
I think Kelly has warmed herself now to this crew, and, you know, I think she came in with a little bit of, like, a nervousness in the sense that people know about their situation and kind of treading lightly, and I think that she's finding her comfort and kind of taking charge the way that she should as a woman.
You know, I was just saying, I have zero problem with just playing the sidekick buddy. I don't really, you know, like I was saying, I don't, if I'm a hero once in a while because I did something great, excellent, but I love being the best friend who drives the ship well and says something funny once in a while and is just friendly with everybody. I don't really need, like, to delve into Gordon's past or, you know, what makes him want to drink on a ship. I love playing Gordon and wherever they think it should go. You know, a guy that's funny or a character that's funny is always endearing to people, so, you know, that's half the battle for me, so.
Anything surprising about a show set in a spaceship?
How much time you spend on that spaceship.
No, but that bridge, you put 8 people on that bridge for a 3-page scene? Oh, man.
7 hours, 8 hours later.
Like, Seth will look at me and say something, and then Seth will look at her and say something, so you got to cover. It's a long, that was surprising, the amount of time it goes into that.
But also, the bridge is my favorite time because it's one of those rare times where we're all together as a cast.
It's great.
And we actually really genuinely love each other. So even though it, you know, gets to be twilighty because you get really tired, we're having fun.
You got to remember, this was about a year and a half ago, I was approached, as she was, by Seth, and I was at a party, and we were outside having a drink, and he said, "Hey, Scott, you ever want to do television again?" Which is funny because why wouldn't I? I just couldn't get any work. That's really what it was. And I said, "Yeah." And so about 4 months later, we were at another party. He goes, "Remember that thing I was saying?" I'm like, "Yeah, I do remember." He said, "Would you ever want to be involved in something like that?" I'm like, "Yes." But that usually is where it ends because then the network comes in and says, "We want this person. We want this." And God bless him for remembering me, thinking of me, writing it basically for me.
He wrote it for you.
And that's rare because I probably wouldn't have gotten the part. You know, we did go in and do like a little audition together to make the network, to make sure that we had some chemistry as buddies. But it's a testament to who he is as a person that doesn't happen in the industry anymore. So I've seen this thing go, you know, and now for him to collect these group of people together who already she knew him, and Jay Lee, who plays John Lamar, knows him, and he was a fan of Penny's, and it was already a group that was supposed to get along, which we do.
A recent episode has Mercer and Malloy disguising themselves as Krill aliens.
Seth was deathly afraid of it, which you kind of want the leader of your show to be like, "Ah, it's all good." But it was the opposite. He didn't like it. I took it as a challenge because I did an episode of Dexter years and years ago, and they taped me. It was a 15-minute process to get me. They taped me to a table naked. And that changed the way I felt about control. And I just knew that I'd have some sort of weird... But Howard Berger, who does all the makeup, was so kind and so beautiful with this, that he would cut a hole in the back and kind of rub my head to make it feel like I was still me. It was not easy. It was hot and sticky, and we were in that stuff for, you know, 18 hours at one point. But I did it, and I feel really good that I went through that challenge. And the episode is, I think, I haven't seen it, but we had such a good time doing it. So it was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. Yeah.
Scott Grimes talks about his voice work.
The voice thing was a new thing for me. That was more, I had to change, you know, because you got to talk into a microphone and be a little bit more energetic and exaggerate a bit. I'd grown up doing did ER for 7 years and stuff, so I'm way more comfortable doing that because there's... And, you know, with a voice, you gotta, to make it funny, it has to be your voice. This, you can do eye movements, I think it's easier.
What's it like acting on the show where there is comedy, but there's also a little more than comedy, too? What's it like for both of you to have that?
Well, it's fun because it's original, and the comedy comes out of the realistic aspects of this show. It's grounded in reality. I mean, yes, we're doing a space show, but we could be on a cruise ship. Because at the end of the day, these are all real people having real experiences, and it's fun to have all of those layers and dynamics. That's what makes real life, right? That's why it feels real.
And Seth's become like the policeman of it. You give me 8 takes. By the 8th take, I'm as exaggerated as you want. And then he'd have to come over and go, "No, you're getting a little too big." Because we do want to keep the show. We don't want to, it's not, like I said, we don't want to we're not doing Airplane here.
Spaceballs
or something. You've got to... I mean, there's been jokes where I'm like, how am I going to say this? People are dying in front of me in explosions, and I have to turn and say something goofy. And that has been the toughest thing, to figure out how to do that without taking the audience completely out of the drama and the stakes that are happening. I don't know if we have yet. I don't know if we've done it, but, you know, it feels like it. When I watch it, I go, "Oh, good, that worked." You know.
No, it looks good.
Is there any room for the cast to improvise scenes?
A little bit. Yeah. It's
not like a rule that we can't, but why would we?
It's all really well written. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, why change perfection?
Why change, yeah. But I'm sure, yeah.
Would Adrian come back for an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
If they asked me, I would absolutely come back. I know Nick's coming back, so I know. What are they going to do without Bobby? That's all I'm asking. So I would absolutely make a cameo, for sure. So. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Next up, our executive producers, Brannon Braga, who has a solid Star Trek background, and David A. Goodman, as they sat down to talk about comparisons to Star Trek.
It's interesting. I think what's interesting about it is, and it's actually, it goes to Seth's intent, which wasn't necessarily to appeal to Star Trek fans, but was to do a show that everybody could watch. What sort of gets lost in the discussion about Star Trek and us is people forget that the reason the original series is still around is that millions of people all over the world watched it and continue to watch it. People who aren't like me, diehard Star Trek fans, they're just audience. And that Seth created this sort of science fiction show that is intended for a mass audience, just the way the original Star Trek was. And so that's weirdly the connection. And I think that is why people are making that it's more like Star Trek.
I also think that it's a return to classical narrative, standalone storytelling, parables that are different, some different issue or storyline each week is, to me anyway, a very refreshing break from the highly serialized television that's happening right now. And that alone kind of is reminiscent of Star Trek.
They talk about a more practical approach to makeup and special effects.
Well, one of the kind of edicts from Seth was to do things practically whenever possible. So there's a beautiful model of the Orville that was shot that we use. The makeup effects. We just want to use as little CGI as possible, which is, I think, gives it a little more reality.
I think also Howard Berger, our makeup artist, Seth has really empowered him to create aliens that don't necessarily aren't necessarily a little bit of forehead makeup, but are a full head mask or full head makeup that really, in some cases, just create visually stunning aliens that really it's a joy to watch that the creation of those.
There's
things.
There's a lot more coming.
Yeah,
and there's aliens we could have never done on Star Trek.
Right.
But even though this show has the same budget as most shows, Howard's pulling it off somehow.
Is it hard to stay away from the R-rated humor?
Seth has a very clear idea of where the lines are for this show. So, and interestingly you say that, but Family Guy's been on network television since 1999. It can't be R-rated.
It's in spirit.
It is, but it walks the line of what's allowed on television. But Seth, in this case, isn't Family Guy. He isn't pulling himself back because in his vision of the show, we go to some edges, but that's not what the show's about. So it's not necessary, really, for anybody to pull him back because it's baked into his concept of the show. Just hang in, Ed.
There's more dick jokes coming up. Don't worry.
The marketing of this series was billed more as a comic series.
I think that, you know, the marketing, I think honestly they ended up doing a great job because we got a great number, and then people came back, and then they moved to a harder time slot, and we did really well, and then they came back. So I have to give Fox a lot of credit, because even though you're right that they emphasized the comedy, it got people to show up. And I think that the idea of that was, look, I'm a giant geek. So you put a spaceship on a show, well, I'm going to turn that on once. I want to see it. I want to see that. But my sister, who's 60, has never watched any of these things. She watches the show and loves it because there's the comedy brought her to it. I mean, I'm a brother. That was the other reason. But she continues to watch it and love it because there are things there for those people out there who are not interested in the genre. So from a marketing standpoint, I give them kudos.
But we were
wondering.
Well, is the audience going to accept the drama, the drama part of it?
Right.
Are they going to accept the mixture of it? And luckily,
they did.
You did. We're happy.
But you're right. I mean, you're right. There was like, is this the right way to sell it? It was something we were talking about.
And is it going to connect?
Right.
One of the things that I think the show did that Star Trek failed to do, a lot of times showing a young officer kind of learning the ropes and stumbling a little bit. And I thought that was a lot more human. Star Trek, they just seemed to write themselves a little too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I love that episode, I think. You know, and I think Halston did it just a... are you talking about Ed, or are you talking about Halston?
Yeah.
Halston, just great in that episode. Yeah. You really got a sense of vulnerability that I really enjoyed, again, as a viewer.
Brannon Braga directed his first episode in the first season.
Directing the show was great. Terrifying.
Was it?
Has a lot going on. A lot of moving parts. Big sets, big cast. But as I always say, it's hard to screw up a great script. And the first script I got was the Mocklin Baby episode. And I'm just like, this is mine to fuck up. Because
we brought him back two more times. He directed two more.
Nice,
but it's fun. I mean, I'm comfortable in the genre.
Well, they tackle more serious issues.
It's part of the DNA of the show. It's we're going to run into some strange situations that might be reminiscent of things today.
You know, we've got a show dealing with the negative effects of social media. We've got a show. Religious fanaticism is a big issue in a couple of, actually two shows, I think, and a couple of other issues that we're playing around.
We don't necessarily come up with an episode to tackle an issue.
Right.
They usually manifest themselves. Right. There are more. Yep.
They've had Liam Neeson and Charlize Theron as guest stars.
Well, it's an effort to get, I mean, when, you know, Seth has an amazing working relationship with Liam and Charlize from his Western. They loved working with him. So you have, and Seth has done years of Family Guy, and he's worked with just amazing actors coming through the door of that show. And people love, actors love working with Seth. And so that allows a wide range of people that you might not see on network television. But then Robert Knepper was like somebody that Seth saw and thought that guy's perfect for that role. So it's a mix. Rob is a friend of Seth's, a fan of Seth's. He's done Family Guy. He's likes working with him and was like, sure, I'll do it. And I think that's a great, I'm glad you recognized it. We got some behind the scenes. Jonathan Frakes directed last night's episode, and Robbie McNeil directed our episode on the zoo episode. And
James Conway did the bio-ship.
James Conway is the director.
He's done Star Trek.
You know, so. Brandon has some little bit of an association with Star Trek. Yeah. The audience is showing up, and Seth's the star. I don't think the audience continues to show up if they don't like what they're...
A little in over his head.
Right.
And wasn't the first pick for the job. And that is going to have to prove himself.
And that's part of the story.
Again, that's something that Star Trek never did, was to have somebody kind of learn the job.
Right.
To prove himself. Right about that.
I mean, I guess in the Star Trek Bible, you really couldn't do a story.
Right.
Yeah, captains were kind of... You know, you had to have a good captain.
The best of the job. Okay. Yeah.
You didn't get to be a captain in that case.
But also what you're saying, too, there's a source of humor. And that's important to the show, too, is that Seth is a character who is flawed, and that gives you avenues of jokes.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Joining us next was Penny Johnson Jarrell, the former Star Trek Deep Space Nine alumni, who plays the Orville's doctor, Claire Finn, and talks about her days on another series, The Paper Chase.
The Paper Chase was the reason I stayed here in Los Angeles. I came from New York. I came from Juilliard. And, you know, from there, we were going to do theater forever. And when I went to California to do a Jonathan Demme movie, and I go, oh, I can't wait to get back to New York. And then Paper Chase happened. And John Houseman is the reason, because he was headmaster there at Juilliard, not during my time. I called him Juicy Lips because he loved to slop it on you. But that was one of my, I loved doing paper chase.
She talks about the comparisons between Star Trek Deep Space Nine and the Orville.
I think that the Orville is different, but it's definitely a science fiction dramedy. And I think it stands alone by itself in that it's innovative in being able to extract real-life issues, journey, and action sprinkled with funny. And sprinkled with not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to laugh my butt off funny, but funny that... kind of like when you're thinking something and I'm talking and you're not really listening to what I'm talking about. You're thinking about, I wonder what she ate for breakfast, which could be a funny little quirk thing, but we're saying it for you. So I think that we're being a voice to be able to bring to the table an opportunity for conversations to begin.
She's worked on a few ensembles in her career.
Well, I have to tell you this. They didn't believe me. They, meaning the Orville. When we were talking about this and we were first doing it, and then when I saw the pilot, and I turned and I looked at everybody and I said, okay, great. This is my swan song. And I go, what do you mean this is over? I said, no, this is the show I'm going to keep doing until I don't want to do this anymore. I say, how do you know that? I said, because I haven't been on any show that is right. Not a show that has a certain caliber of ensemble and a willingness of a group of people to give it all that they have. And I think that's the secret. The secret is to be willing to not just decide you're hired as an actor, but decide that you're hired as a team player. So Seth said something in the very first meeting that all of us had. He said, this is a show with an ensemble. I may be the captain, but I'm not the star of the show. You may find some episodes where you are actually the star of the show, and you may find some episodes where I'm probably giving you free money. And he's held true to that. I have to say that I am not disappointed. Not at all.
So what's it like to do a scene where a blob is pretty much hitting on you?
Oh my God. It's gooey. someone tweeted, let the glob do the do. Or somehow it's like, oh my God. What's it like? It's funny. It's so funny to, it's like this microphone can be there and then you're going to make it some big hairy monster. But I'm talking to it like it's a hairy monster right now. So he's not there physically, but he is there vocally. Norm comes in the room and he's in the corner and he is speaking. And if you've heard Norm, voice.
Oh, yeah.
The voice alone is slimy. Okay. and that's a credit. Okay, that's a credit to him. He does slime like nobody else. Sleazy slime. And so it's great because I always love being able to be in a show where you have a love-hate relationship with the character. In Castle, it was with Castle and I loved it. Larry Sanders Show, it was with Hank. So, you know, I loved 24. It was the man I was married to. So, you know, it's kind of wonderful to have that because that gives you something to work with.
Now, how did she approach playing the Doctor?
I think that what she's emerging, evolving as is the sage of the ship with sass. The sage with sass, and what I'm loving about it is that she's not just stuck in sick bay. She gets to go out and do things. And as a person who's been dying to shoot a gun or fight or whatever, I'm loving it. And also what Seth has done with this character is that she's not just the Doctor who stays in her hub. I'm actually a full-on woman. I'm in episodes to come, you'll get to see that. I'm a mother. I have two wonderful sons on the ship, and that quality, I think, brings her to a more human, down-to-earth, and she's funny. She gets to be funny, and sometimes downright scary, too. So I think I've been able to branch out of that, and that's going to be the difference between your typical science fiction doctor. But I do get to do that, and I'm glad that I do, because I like the aspect of healing and about, if nothing else, I think science fiction gives people hope. hope that things that we haven't created today may be in existence tomorrow. And so with my character, that's healing people in those wonderful props that I did.
Her character is more level-headed than most.
You need an adult in every bunch. Because if you don't, all hell will break loose. And I do like that. It's so funny that I said to my husband, I always get these characters. He says, because that's who you are. And I go, really? He goes, yes, you can take a bunch of garbage that's circulating and you can make sense of it as a person. He said, and so that's a characteristic of Penny that's been picked up and, you know, you can just do it with your eyes closed. So I like it.
Does she like that the series tackles serious issues?
I am very happy and satisfied with that. What satisfies me even more is that it's presenting it and we don't try to answer it for you. Mm-hmm. We just try to make you aware of it so that you can think it through. I say that this is a great show about thinking and about imagining and about being able to have a smile on your face at the end of the day. We didn't kill ourselves off as humans in the future, so we do exist as humans. But we do have a ways to go in terms of diversity. We have a ways to go in terms of trying to impose our feelings on a group of people because we think our thing is right and it doesn't stink. So we will be presenting that because I think that, if nothing else, the atmosphere of today, especially here in America, it's time for us to keep a dialogue going and just be aware of people's differences and learn to embrace them and love them.
One thing I really loved about her was in the episode where you were actually giving advice to the young officer who was having trouble with command. And you were like...
Was that your tweet?
No, that wasn't my tweet.
Oh, okay, all right.
I wish it was.
Tweet, wonderful.
But I thought she was... That's what really made me really like her a lot, was that, you know, the scenes you had with her.
Well, thank you. I hope more to come. How about that one?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I will continue to give them advice, even when they don't want to take it.
The series, in so many ways, looked at humanity through a sci-fi lens and really did some poignant stories that were serious, but also had some fun episodes too. As I said earlier, that's quite a balance. You can still see The Orville on Hulu and Disney Plus. If you want to rent it, that's at Apple TV, Fandango at Home, and Amazon Prime Video. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tony Tolato.